Good morning. Isn't it beautiful out there today? It's almost a shame to be inside to worship. We ought to be outside enjoying this weather. Last week, I spoke about the first three verses of Hebrews 12. And actually, verse 3 is kind of a transition verse, so I included it in this week's lesson also. The tremendous difficulty that the Hebrew people were having at this time, the tremendous persecution, the tremendous difficulty, families against family, friends against friends, culture against culture, it was absolutely tremendous. And there's a word in verse number 3 that I think we need to stop and think about for a minute. It's the Greek word eklou. It has to do with the idea of being discouraged in your soul, he says. Being frustrated. Giving up. Just, I've had it. I've done all I can do. And then I did some more that I didn't think I could do. And I don't know where to go from here. I just don't know. Well, that's what our lesson's about today. How to avoid discouragement. Because it is possible, even in the most difficult of times, to avoid being discouraged. And in the fast-paced life that we live today, where everything seems to be crowding in on us, it's so easy to get discouraged, to give up. To just, I love the word faint as it's used here. We're not to faint. We're not to just pass out. And that's a feeling I think probably all of us have had at one time or another. Maybe are having at this time. But this passage tells us that the first thing we need to do is consider the example that Jesus gives. He did it. I can too. Listen to what it says. Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your soul. And then he says, you've not yet resisted to blood, striving against sin. Consider the sufferings of Jesus. I mean, you think what he went through time after time being rejected. He fed them. And then the only reason they followed him was because they could get more food. What they could get, you ever feel like that? Like you're just doing and doing and doing and all anybody wants is more and more and more. Jesus has been there, done that, got the scars to prove it. Consider him. He didn't quit. He didn't give up. Consider the garden. And I really think that's the context of this, you've not yet resisted the bloodshed. You think of Jesus in the garden, an innocent man, knowing that he was innocent, knowing that he had not committed sin, knowing what was going to happen in the morning, knowing the beating that he was going to take, knowing the mocking and the scorn, the laughter, knowing the cross that he was going to be put upon, and then knowing that he was going to be separated from God, which had never happened before. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? He knew that was going to happen. He knew that. Jesus was so much in pain, so pressured that the capillaries in his sweat glands broke, and the sweat became as drops of blood. That's stress. That's pain. That's fear. That's why he said, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. Consider Jesus. Because I don't think any of us have gotten quite that far yet. We may be pushed to the edge. We may be pushed as far as we think we can go. But Jesus has gone farther. And we need to consider him. And then we need to compare our suffering to his. People have said mean things about me. People have done awful things to me. Nobody's standing with me. Nobody's encouraging me. I have to face this alone. No, you don't, and neither did Jesus. Neither did Jesus. God provides. And then he says, as we go on through this, not only have you a need to consider him and to recognize that you've not yet resisted the bloodshed, he says in verse 5, and you've forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as the sons. You've forgotten. You need to remember. Why do things happen? Why do we receive God's correction? Well, let's look at a couple places where that word chastise, because I think part of the problem is that word chastise. You know, that's an awful sounding word. Gives a picture of a beating, of a whipping, of that. But look at how the Bible uses it in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, in verse number 4. And he says, you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training, same word, the training and the nurture of the Lord. Admonition of the Lord. Training. That puts a little different twist on it. If the translators would have put in here, if you endure training instead of chastising, might mean a little more to our society today. It's the very same word. Look over in 2 Timothy. We're going to see another use of that word. 2 Timothy 3 and verse number 16. Paul writes, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for chastisement, for correction, for chastisement in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. I just inserted the same meaning that the Hebrew writer used, or they translated it that way, into what Paul told Timothy. And we recognize and understand that we need to be instructed in righteousness. We need to be corrected. That's all that word means. Those kind of times come into our life over and over and over. We need to remember the principles of God's chastisement, of his instruction. Look it back in our text and see what it says. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. do not reject, do not disregard the training, the instruction, the correction that comes from God's Word. You can't do that and be right with God. I can remember years ago, quite a few years ago, it was a different day and a different time. They used physical chastisement on students. And I was doing some things I shouldn't do. And one of the assistant football coaches was teaching a math class that I had. And he said something to me, and in a typical punk way, of I smarted back at him. And he just kind of went like, okay, you come up here. Bend over to the desk. And he opened the drawer and pulled out the paddle. And gave me about 5 good ones. And when he got done, laid the paddle back down on the desk, and I'm still laying there. And I turned and looked at him, and I said, oh, you're finished? Dumb statement. He said, no. Picked the paddle back up and proceeded to give me 10 more. I didn't say anything after that. I kept my mouth shut. But I disregarded his first 5. Hey, I'm bad. I'm tough. I can handle that. I don't need to listen to you. Forgetting that he's a football coach. And he didn't lay into those first 5 like he did the next 10. I didn't disregard those. But don't people sometimes disregard what God says? And it's usually a yes, but. Yes, I know it says that, but my circumstances are different. Nobody understands what circumstance I'm in. The first thing we need to understand about God's correction is it's not to be despised. Because, folks, it's not going to be just 10 more cracks. God means it when He says it. And we need to understand that we are not to despise the chastening of the Lord. Number 2, principle of the Lord's correction is that it's not aimed at discouraging you. Do not be discouraged when you're rebuked by Him. Well, why would God chastise me? Why would He correct me? Why would He instruct me? Well, it can be one of 2 reasons. One is either to reclaim you because you wandered off the track and you need to come back. Or it could be to strengthen you. I sometimes think when I'm going through difficulties and problems in life, Lord, what are you training me for? What? I'm doing all I can now and you're training me for something more? You ever argue with the Lord? Lord, I'm taking all I can. This has got to lighten up. I can't take anymore. My plate's full. As a matter of fact, it's overflowing. And I'm about to give up. He said, don't become discouraged. That's not why you're having problems. It's to strengthen you or to reclaim you. you know, what are all the old sayings? No pain, no gain. If you don't use your muscles, they just go into apathy. They're just gone. If you want strong muscles, you need to. Got an AARP magazine. I still, even at my age, can't believe I'm old enough to be an AARP, but that's another whole story. One of the things they were talking about was exercise. And you know what one of the things they suggested? Standing on one foot with your leg up while you're brushing your teeth to help you to gain and strengthen balance. I told Sandy, if I did that, I'd fall flat on my head. But another one I thought was interesting, they suggested hopping around the living room. And I told her, I said, I don't know if the floor joists will take that, hopping around. But the idea was you bend the bone just a little bit and then straighten it back up. You know, when you land, you bend it straight, and it strengthens the bone density. In other words, if you don't use them, they get weak. They get weak. And if we don't use our spiritual muscles, guess what happens to them? The very same thing. If there's nothing to push against, then the muscles get weak. They really do. Third principle of the Lord's correction is His correction is proof of His love, not His neglect. You know, have you ever thought, how could the Lord let this happen to me? You know, Lord, why don't you take this away from me? What you're doing is accusing God of neglecting you. And that's not what it's all about. Look at what it says. For whom the Lord loves, He chastens. He chastens. His correction is proof of His love, not of His neglect, not of His uncaring attitude. As I was studying through this thing, I thought to myself, you know, Lord, maybe you don't need to love me quite this much. Humor. But you ever felt that way? I'm getting all the love I can handle, Lord. All I can handle. But His correction, His instruction, His training is proof of His love. That's what that text is telling us. But oh, how easy it is to say, poor me, Lord doesn't love me anymore. He wouldn't let all these bad things happen in my life. Not true. Fifth principle of His correction is that it's only given to God's children. Look at what it says. And He scourges every son whom He receives. Every son who receives. Down a block just a little ways, there are some kids. But if they were my kids, they wouldn't act the way they act. I suppose all of us have neighbors like that. But, you know, it's not my place to go out and correct them. They're not my sons and daughters. Now, when my sons and daughters acted like that, I know it's hard to believe, you know them, that they would misbehave at all, but... They were corrected because I loved them. And I didn't want my kids acting like that because I knew it's cute when you're through 3, 4, 5 It's not so cute when you're 14, 15, 16. And it's not cute at all when you're 26, 27, 28. And if nobody stops it when you're 2, 3, or 4, it's really hard to stop it when they're 26, 27, 28. And if you love your kids, you're going to correct them when they're children. When they're children. So when His corrections comes into our life, we need to be thankful. God cares enough about me to accept me as His child and to correct me. Oh, did I feel like that when my dad corrected me? Probably not. Probably. I was a bit of a stubborn kid. I wasn't too happy. I know, I've corrected all of those stubborn habits now, but I imagine I was quite a challenge to my parents. Because I know how I was when I was a teenager and when I was in my 20s. We need to be thankful that the Lord loves us enough to correct us. And then we need to recognize, verse 7, that the correction of the Lord is confirmation, if you will, of our relationship with Him. So I can look back and remember the evening that I was baptized. I can tell you where I was sitting in the auditorium. I can tell you who did it. I can tell you the song that went on. All of that's, you know, and we're talking a few years back. But that's fresh in my mind. Because that's an important event. I can tell you what it was like when Don was born, when Sandy and I got married. We remember those important events. I can remember what it was like when they handed me my discharge papers. I'm out of here. You remember those days. But not as bright as the day they happened. But to reconfirm God's love for you, He chastens us. Listen, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? None. If he has a father, he chastens him. Now, he may have some man in the house who contributed the sperm, but he's not a father if he doesn't chasten. If he doesn't train and discipline that child. If he doesn't correct him. We need to recognize that His correction is positive proof of our relationship with Him. Proof of that relationship. All children are disciplined. Who have parents, who are parents. Now I see some little humans running around that I feel sorry for sometimes because they don't have a parent that loves them enough to correct them. And they can make life very frustrating for the rest of us. But you know, when you look at them, you think, just imagine the problems that kid is going to have when he gets in the workforce. Just imagine the problems he's going to have trying to have a relationship with a husband or wife. Nobody's ever told him no. Nobody's ever said, you can't do that. You have to do this. Then verses 8 through the first part of 10 basically tell us that we need to release our pride. We need to submit to the Lord. Listen as I read. But if you're without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you're illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed, for a few days, chastened us as seemed best to them. When we think back to our childhood, were your parents always fair when they disciplined you? Were they always right? Did you deserve every bit of correction that you got? You might have needed more than what you got, but there were times when it just wasn't right. Now, what's the... Oh, it's not fair. You let that one get away with it. Why didn't you let me get away with it? If you have multiple children in the family, you'll hear that one. You may have even said it. Particularly if you're one of the older of the children. How come they get away with that? I was never able to get away with it. I used to say that all the time. My sister got away with murder, but again, that's another story. We still respected our parents in that we tried to obey them. Even though we understood at the time that it was for what they thought was best. Not necessarily what I thought was best. As a matter of fact, many times it wasn't what I thought was best. I thought I should be allowed to go and do and be whatever I wanted to be. My dad had the strange idea I ought to do things the right way. And I ought to do them at the time he told me to do them. And in the way he told me to do them. But still, I knew there were consequences if I didn't. Severe consequences sometimes. And so I paid respect to what he said. Sometimes I thought about, you know, this might be worth it, and went on and did something I shouldn't have done anyway, and paid the price for it. Isn't it so much better to submit ourselves to the one who's always right, who always knows and has my best interest at heart? Because I think it's true all of us, every one of us, have made mistakes. Done what we thought was right, and then look back on it and say, how could I be so stupid? Just can't believe I was that dumb. Just can't believe it. The frustrating thing is we become parents, and then we're put in the situation of trying to direct our children the way we think they ought to go, which isn't always right. But it's the best you can do to be a parent. Isn't it better? I believe that's exactly what it says. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? Subjection to the Father of the flesh, subjection to the Father of the spirits. What's that tell us as fathers, as mothers? If we don't teach our children to be in subjection to us, they're going to have a hard time being in subjection to God. And we need to release our pride. I can do it myself. I know the best way. I know what I need and what I want. I know the way it ought to work. I know the way I think it should go. And say, not my will, but thy will be done. Just like Jesus did. Father, let this cup pass from me. I think that's the best way to handle this right now, is what he's saying. But he says, nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. We need to release our pride, and then we'll receive the benefits of the Lord's correction. Let's look at the last part of 10 and 11. They chasten us for what seems to be best to them, but he, God, for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who've been trained by it. You remember back when you were in school? Didn't you just love it when the teacher said, okay, I want this paper on this date and this paper on this date, and we're having a test on this date, and this project needs to be done by the end of the grading period. Wasn't that just, oh, goody. I've got papers I can write and research I can do, and I can fill my empty time up with this project and not have to go out and play, or I have to go out and... No, we didn't. It's an extremely rare person that got them excited and joyful. Because you see, when we're going through training, it's really hard to look at the end. Really hard. Pam told me just this week, she could see the end of her schooling. And she said that with such anticipation in her voice. No more tests, no more papers, no more classes, no more teachers telling me what I have to learn. Never enjoyable going through it. But it's worth it. It's worth it. When I first got out of the Navy, again, a few years ago, I went to Kent State, enrolled, GI Bill. Hey, why not? I didn't know what I wanted to do. I took courses, got B's, C's. I don't think I failed any of them, but I didn't get good grades. Then I decided to go to school of preaching and started preaching, and then I decided to go to Ohio Valley. And I wanted a degree. I knew what I was there for. I wanted to learn. Straight A's down to Ohio Valley. Straight A's. 4-0. And you know the difference? Same brain, same me. I knew what I wanted. And I knew what the end result would be. First time I tried to go to college, I wanted a college degree, because that's what, you know, you get a better job, But it wasn't, I couldn't see the end. I couldn't see the result. So I didn't work hard. I didn't do what I should do. But folks, if we endure, if we learn from the Lord's correction, we can be partakers of his holiness. We can have that peaceable fruit of righteousness. I can be like him. I'm sure you've heard me pray over and over, Lord, help us to walk closer to you, to your son. Help us to be more like him. That's what I'm talking about. So I can be more holy. And then that wonderful, peaceable emotion within us, I did what I should have. I did what Jesus would have done. You look at it and you say, you know, I could have handled it this way or that way or this way, but this is what the Lord would have done. And it feels so good when you do that. That's that peaceable fruit of righteousness. And the only way you do that is to be trained to do that. And to not despise that training. And to not disregard that training. Peter talks about this same topic in 1 Peter 5, verses 10 and 11. Said, "May the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory by Jesus Christ, after you've suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. To him be the glory and the dominion forever and ever." Peter says, if we'll endure the correction of the Lord for a while, then we're going to be perfected, we're going to be established, we're going to be strengthened, and we're going to be settled. And we'll recognize that all glory and honor goes to him. Couldn't have done it myself. Couldn't have done it myself. That's the chastening of the Lord. Are you undergoing it? Well, I got news for you. You either have, or you're going to have problems in your life. You can just mark that down. You either are coming out of having problems, or you're having problems, or you're going to have problems. Satan isn't going to give up. How do you handle the problems? Do you let them discourage you and frustrate you? Or do you let them settle you and perfect you and establish you and give you that peaceable fruit of righteousness? That's our choice. God has provided his Son to give us an example. God has provided his Word to strengthen us and comfort us. God has provided a congregation of loving people to pick us up when we fall down and to support us. But we have a choice. We can disregard it. We can despise it. And we can try to look Satan in the eye and say, I'll take care of you myself. I don't need any help. And lose. Big time. Please. Please. Don't disregard the Lord's instructions on how to handle discouragement in your life. Please, if we can help, won't you come? Won't you do it now while we stand and while we sing?